Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Ryan Love about his commercial novel, Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out. Ryan is a former journalist and editor from Northern Ireland, and he now works in music PR. In this episode, we discuss writing different coming out stories to capture a variety of experiences, how lockdown was a now or never moment to achieve his novel writing dreams, and how he wrote the first draft in an intense 3 weeks. But first, before we hear that, here's Ryan with an excerpt from Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out.
It was almost time. He'd wait until after dessert. That's what he and Madeline had discussed and agreed upon. Perhaps they'd react better on full stomachs. Evening all, Patrick said, striding into the dining room. He threw his jacket over the back of the chair closest to him. Before you say anything, Lizzie, I got caught up in traffic. You're here, and that's the most important thing, Madeline said, as she gave her son a kiss on the cheek. Lizzie, could you please come and give me a hand in the kitchen? Patrick sat himself down on the vacated seat beside his father. Arthur couldn't help but notice how tired he looked, but he wasn't going to bring it up. After the breakdown of a previous relationship and the death of his best friend, his son had turned to alcohol. It was only when Madeline had reached breaking point and begged him that he had agreed to go to a rehab facility. With his life now back on track, Patrick had thrown himself into work following Arthur's retirement. So, what's going on? I figured it must be bad when you said I couldn't bring Scarlett. How are things with you two? You know what? Things are great. I really think she could be the one, Dad. Arthur smiled. Seeing Patrick happy after the last few years meant the world to him. Well, you know what you need to do then, son. She's a special lady. Don't let a day go by where you don't make her feel that. Elizabeth reappeared, carrying bowls of food. If you've got two working legs, you could actually come and help, Patrick. I'm on my way, no need for the sarcasm, Patrick said, before turning back to his father. I'll never understand how she got two men to propose to her. Arthur tried to join in the chat and laughter as much as he could throughout dinner. Every so often, he felt Madeline's bright green eyes on him from across the table. They were still filled with the same energy they had been when he first looked into them over 50 years earlier. Her freshly layered, snowy white hair framed her delicate features. You're on another planet tonight, Daddy. Do you want a top-up? Go on then, why not? Elizabeth stretched across and filled his glass. There's so much depth to the flavour of this one. Madeline gave her glass a little shake. It's a little rich for me, she says after almost half a bottle. Arthur laughed loudly. It felt good to momentarily forget, even if it was fleeting. Patrick was slouched in his chair, one hand resting on his stomach. He'd put on a little weight over the summer, which he was quick to put down to Scarlett's good home cooking. Mum, dinner was amazing. We have to do this more often if you're going to spoil us like this. Forget more often. I want to know what's going on and why we're here tonight, Elizabeth said, before taking another sip from her almost empty glass. I know you pair. There's something. I've seen those glances at each other. You're right, Arthur said, prompting all three heads to turn in his direction. There is a reason we asked you to come here tonight. Madeline reached across and held her hand out. Arthur took it and their fingers knitted together. He squeezed it tightly. "Is something wrong?" Elizabeth said. The mood in the room had shifted. Arthur hated hearing the sudden sense of panic in his daughter's voice. He felt Madeline's wedding ring press into his finger as she gripped his hand even tighter. "Is Davina McCall about to walk in with our long-lost brother?" "Shut up, Patrick," Elizabeth hissed. "Daddy, please, what's going on?" Arthur took a deep breath. "Your mother and I will always love each other very much. But we're not together anymore, and it's not because we don't still love each other very much." Arthur paused. His next few words would change everything. There was no stopping now, as his two children stared back at him, their eyes wide with anticipation. He closed his eyes and allowed the words to finally leave his mouth. "The truth is, I'm gay."
Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really happy to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out.
Thanks so much for having me, Chloe. I'm so excited to be able to chat about the book with you.
So, Ryan, can you start by telling us what Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out is all about?
So, Arthur and Teddy are grandfather and grandson, and the story focuses on them being at this point in both of their lives, so it's very different stages of their lives, but they're both ready to come out and sort of live the life that they're wanting to live at this stage. So it's a fundamentalist story about family. These two guys have this lovely relationship, but they both have this secret that they don't know about. And it's just them then supporting each other through this journey and taking their family and friends on it with them.
Yeah, and they don't get the best reception from every family member, but there is a loving family around them either way.
There is, of course. Yeah, I wanted to bring in, you know, just someone who struggled with it a little, whether it's the sort of the idea that secrets have been kept, or whether it's, you know, their attitude towards them being gay, just the life they're going to be living. A little bit of friction there, but generally a supportive family, which is something I wanted to reflect because it was, you know, my own experience as well.
Yeah, so where did this novel idea come from? Was it something that in your own life has sparked that then made you think about the story idea? Where did the first kind of inspiration come from?
It was funny because originally I did actually want to stay away from the sort of coming out story, because I think it's something that, you know, is done and done really well by so many books, so many TV shows. And then a lot of it did center around sort of writing an older character, you know, in terms of the grandfather figure that I really wanted to create. I'd had this character in my head and I just didn't quite know what I was doing with him. I just got this lovely image of this older man who I wanted as a sort of grandfather. And then I accidentally was sort of just reading stories and saw a man in America who during lockdown came out and he was 90. And I was just blown away by this man, his story, just the fact that he had done this and was out there, you know, being just being his best self. And I was like, wow, this is incredible at that age. And then the two sort of just kind of merged, and I didn't feel like I wanted to just focus on that older person's story because, again, I just don't have the lived experience. So bringing in the younger character and being able to build a bond between Teddy and Arthur then sort of allowed me to explore both stories and supporting each other through the same thing at different stages of life.
Yes, what was it like then to write as a almost 80-year-old man? Because I imagine, like you say, you haven't got that lived experience, but every aspect of writing we have to kind of use our imagination and put ourselves into other people's point of views and try and imagine what it would be like. But was that particularly difficult to kind of imagine someone who is, I'm not even going to do the maths, but many, many, many years older than you are?
He is. And you know, I thought it was going to be much harder because, again, the lived experience and stuff like that. But I think the way I approached it was to look at his personality, his character traits, and just take it from there and sort of go, well, I'm writing a man who I know is family orientated, who has had a lot of hard experiences, and just take my own experiences, channel those, and again, using the older people in my life, you know, and I've so many great aunts and great uncles who've had incredibly difficult lives and tough experiences. And to sort of just absorb some of those and look at the strength of character that they have, and to really just take elements of those and build this character and hope that someone of that age, you know, might read it and sort of see some of themselves in it. But fundamentally, yeah, it was easier than I expected. But it was so lovely to sort of put yourself in that mindset and sort of go, ah, okay, this is what I think he would do. But to use his personality and sort of make sure his decisions and actions were sort of reflective of the character that, you know, within his soul that I sort of felt I knew at that stage.
Were there any points where you had to change a reaction or behavior because you started to think, no, that's what I would do, or a younger person would do it? Actually, there's a scene that I'm thinking of that's much later in the book, so I won't spoil, but he almost has a very, Arthur has a very kind of calm and reasonable way of dealing with things. And I think that kind of comes with his age.
Yes. That, funnily enough, wasn't too difficult because since I was a very small boy, I've been told that I have an old head and young shoulders. So for
Deep down,
me,
you are an 8-year-old man.
I think so. So in some ways, writing younger is much more difficult for me because I didn't have the experiences that I now associate with perhaps a teenager or someone in their 20s. So in some ways, I was much happier writing older and sort of getting myself into that mindset.
So, kind of on a practical level, first of all, actually, tell us a little bit more about tell us a bit more about Teddy. Tell us a little bit more about Arthur, and then we'll talk about
Yes.
how you kind of built them on a more kind of practical level.
So let's start with Arthur. Arthur's 79 when we first meet him. He's been married to Madeline for 50 something years. He's been generally quite happy with life. They have two kids together, Elizabeth and Patrick. And he's had a little bit of health trouble over the couple of years just before we meet him. And this has got him to the point now where he's approaching 80, he's had these experiences, and he just knows that he needs to do this. So we meet him in chapter one, he's gathering the family, and he's been through it all with Madeline, and he's ready to tell the kids what they're doing. And Madeline is the most incredible, supportive wife who is literally with him every step of this journey. And she sits down at the dinner table with the kids as well, and they, you know, tell them exactly what's going on. And I think Arthur is just such a strong person, but again, he's made by Madeline's strength and her sort of love and support over their 50-year marriage. And, you know, that has got him to this point as well where he's comfortable to do this. And I think some of that then transcends into Teddy, who has again this really close relationship with his granddad. So Teddy's 21. He's again had a tough couple of years where his dad died when he was 18. He didn't go to uni, so he's very much lost. He doesn't know what he wants out of life. He's really struggling because again he's keeping this secret from his family. He's got his two best friends, Lexi and Shaq, and yeah, he's sort of reaching that point where he wants to come out and just be a little freer. But again, Arthur's announcement kind of throws a spanner in the works. So Teddy's a funny one because you know, he's offered his mom has been trying to get him into the newspaper that she works for. But of course he's completely put off by this and the sort of the nepotism angle and sort of not wanting to be this person who needs a helping hand. But when we meet him, he has reluctantly agreed to take this chance because, you know, he enjoys writing and I sort of, you know, threw myself in a little bit there and sort of grabs this opportunity to sort of, you know, go and do something because he just need to grab on to an opportunity, even if it has come from his mum, and he sort of embraces this as time goes on.
So I'm imagining you with, I don't know, hundreds of character charts or Pinterest boards or whatever it is. How did you go about creating these characters?
They're not quite pin boards, but there were a lot of notes. So I mean, I think it was about 2 weeks I did of like proper planning where I was scribbling everything down and making all my sort of character profiles and making sure that I just had a good grip on who everyone was and what they were doing, who they were, you know, and what their sort of purpose was. But on the whole, it was quite a nice bunch of characters to sort of juggle. And because obviously it's dual perspective, so we're alternating between Arthur and Teddy in each chapter, it sort of allowed me to sort of dip in and out of each character a little bit more and sort of make sure that I feel like everyone got a little chance to shine. So certain characters who pop up in Oscar's might not pop up in Arthur's story, sorry, in Teddy's story along the way. But then you get, chances to merge them all, which was really lovely to sort of have characters who have existed solely in, one chapter to pop up and meet Arthur's friends or Teddy's friends, which was really nice.
Yeah, did you always intend to make it a dual perspective, or had you had this idea of making it just one character's perspective?
It was pretty much dual perspective from the get-go. Once I knew the story and had the character of Arthur and knowing Arthur was gay and wanting the focus then to sort of be shared amongst a younger perspective as well, it was pretty much dual from the get-go, which is something I love because it was a nice opportunity to dive into the two different mindsets.
And you've got quite a large cast of characters because obviously you've got the family, you've got the friends, you've got the people that they know where they live. How is it kind of managing all of those? Because they all have to have kind of distinct personalities and they have to be different in certain ways and they will have to have some sort of purpose. Was that a difficult thing? Because I can imagine it would be.
It was to an extent. I definitely made sure again before I really started writing that I think I had a grip on who everyone was. It was nice because I've got such a large family. Like, mum is one of eight, dad's one of nine. I have a huge amount of people sort of pick bits from and define these personalities. So again, it was just really nice to sort of be able to go, okay, this person reminds me of this aunt, or this one reminds me of this cousin, and it was like throwing little bits into the characters and going, yeah, they all kind of have something individual, and hopefully when people, do get the chance to read it, they can see that, and hopefully everyone feels defined and human, just someone that they recognize.
Do you think any of your family will be opening the book and being like, that character's me?
This is a conversation I've had with my sister because they were very nervous. And I had to reassure them when I told them that Teddy had two sisters that was as far as it went. They are not represented that deeply in any of the characters because I made that mistake with a previous manuscript that I'd written where I leaned in quite heavily on family, and it wasn't uncomfortably so or anything like that, but it definitely was much more than I did in this book where I really did try to separate the sort of reality from the fiction. Because I would absolutely hate someone to read it and think, oh gosh, is that me? Is that what I'm like? Is that I want them to maybe see nice things and be like, oh, like mum can say that reminds me of your sister or something I would do, just little things like that.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? When I don't know how many of your family have had the chance to read it yet, probably not many, because it's not quite out yet when we're speaking, but I wonder whether they will have that kind of reaction, whether they'll be able to separate you and kind of your family from the story, because it is such a family-centered novel. I think naturally people do almost look for themselves in other people's work sometimes if you know a writer.
Absolutely.
I haven't had that happen, thankfully, or not to my knowledge anyway. But
Yeah,
you sound like you, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you sound like you're someone that is quite a bit of a planner, or someone that at least thinks about the kind of the structure. Your novel is incredibly satisfying as a narrative, and I feel like you kind of hit all the right beats at the right time. So did you plan it, or was it more you had the characters, you knew them really well, and you just kind of knew where you wanted to go and you just wrote? How did it work?
It was a little bit of both. So I had a good learning experience writing my first manuscript and took the things that I learned from that experience. And again, a lot of that was down to character and those profiles, which I think was the best thing I did for myself to really have a grip on their personalities and knowing just who they were so that it really influenced their actions so that things made sense to people. Because there's nothing worse when I think a character does something and you go, hang on, that just doesn't make sense for that person. So I was really aware of that. But in terms of plotting, I had an idea of where I was going, but I'm so impatient that I just want to dive straight in and start writing and see where things take me, and then hope I make decisions correctly based on what I think I know of the character.
I'm gonna go back to that in a bit, but one of the things I really was keen to speak to you about was that although your novel is described and is a very uplifting and warm novel, you do have other elements of the novel which are sadder or darker in a very honest way, I think. And you have several gay characters in the novel and several different coming out stories. You're not just kind of making it seem like it's all cheerful and lovely and happy for everyone. How important was it for you to show this kind of spectrum of experience?
Yeah, that was so important. Sorry, excuse me. So yeah, that was so important because, again, I've been exceptionally lucky and privileged to have had the most incredible loving support from my entire family. But for friends, it's not been, some have had not great experiences, some have had the worst experiences. And I mean, it's such a unique experience for every single person that we go through. So yeah, it was important for me to at least touch on issues and not just present it as a big sort of, wonderful hug, because whilst it is for so many, there are other people who go through horrible things. And I think bringing a little bit of the reality of that alongside to try and, make sure that there's a little representation there, but also just to give people hope that even when you have the negative, it can perhaps and hopefully lead to the positive as well.
Because you also touch on suicide, and there is a point where you talk about conversion therapy, particularly when you're talking about how gay people were treated in the past. And I think, as sad as it is to touch on those topics in a very kind of warm and funny and joyful book, it felt to me that you would have been doing a disservice to the story if you hadn't included them as well.
Absolutely. When you've got a man of 80 who lived through an era like that, and at the time Arthur mightn't have been able to come out because it was illegal and all these things that would have been going on. And I think that's his life experience and the things that forced him to make the decision to get married and to have a family and to live this life that was a bit of a lie, even though he finds happiness and he did find a love with Madeline. I think these things that were going on made him who he is as well. So even though he wasn't living as a gay man experiencing those things, they were there in his mind, and the fear, the reality of all of that makes him who he is as a character. But yeah, so really making sure that they were touched on as well, and it's part of his story was something I was really wanting to do, but also just doing it carefully and respectfully and making sure that it felt authentic in case, because people, again, if someone reads this who lived through that, or even at the worst case, experience that, I want them to feel that I've been respectful of it, and those experiences, because that's their story as well. And making sure those stories aren't forgotten. We're in 2023, and again, you can look at things going on, and some of it's absolutely gut-wrenching and terrifying right now. And you see, how shaky rights are, and how things can really change, and things can vanish if we're not careful. So it's just a little reminder, well, of how far we've come, but nothing's ever guaranteed, and it's quite scary out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why it's nice to have both age groups in this novel as well, to see how things have changed, but also as a reminder of like you say, how fragile it can be for people as well. Let's go back and talk about your career as a writer and how you've got to this point, because I know that you've loved books and loved writing and always wanted to be a writer. So kind of tell us where this kind of dream of being an author began and where your love of writing began. And I know your mom was a big part of that, so tell
She
us
was. So this is going to be a love letter to mom.
about that.
Yeah, so from a very young age, I was the eldest, so I was first born, and mom just had a love of books, and I was just so lucky that I had someone who just loved sitting down and reading to me as a young child, and introduced me to Roald Dahl and Dick King Smith and just authors like that, through childhood, where I just absorbed these characters and these wonderful little worlds and just fell in love completely. So, Matilda was a book that I just remember being one of the first where I completely fell in love and saw this character who loved books, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. Look at her off to the library with her little cart. And I just want that. I was from a very small rural area, and I was like, a library? This is incredible. This is somewhere you can go and get access to all these books, because, at the time, we couldn't afford, to be spending too much money on books and stuff like that. And I remember it was a school book fair, where they came and they set up
Oh, I
some of the
loved them. They were
yeah
amazing.
absolutely the best time, and I was always just like, wow, this is the best like few days of the school year. And it was 1998, I think, and the first two Harry Potter books were out, and I hadn't heard of it, saw these two books on the like a bottom shelf, and was like, can I please get these? And we could only afford one of them, and I was like, it's fine, I'm just going to get this book. And again, that was just one of those defining moments where I was like, wow, okay, I've bought like this book, and mum has actually, I don't need to spend money and escape into this world. And it was just the best. And just, yeah, from all of that, it was just something that I just wanted then. I just wanted to do and to sort of, hold this thing of my own as well.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So what made you take the plunge then to writing a novel? And I think you mentioned you'd written a manuscript. So what made you take that step then to think,
yeah,
now I'm going to write?
Yeah, it was definitely one of those lifelong goals that had been there since I was absolutely no age, where I'd be in English class and I would be talking to the teacher, and I was the person who hung around and talked to the English teacher after class and went to the library, and escaped during PE class so I could zoom off and hide in the library. And it was just always one of those things. And then life kind of just, gets in the way, you're doing other things. But it was always there. And then it's a typical story right now, but lockdown happened. And I was just like, do you know what? If I don't do it now, I just feel like I'm never going to do it. So yeah, I wrote this first manuscript. And it was a learning experience. So it took me, I'd say I was working on it for about 3 months, and then put it away and went back to it about maybe 12 months later, finished it. And it was incredible to sort of, go, okay, I got, 85,000 words here. But I just knew that I wasn't quite in love with it. I'd done it, but it just existed, and it didn't feel perhaps as authentic as it should, because I'd leaned in a lot on my own experiences, and it was quite heavy. It was much more mental health focused, with a family aspect as well, and it just didn't quite work. And I mean, I was so lucky that I was able to have the chance to pitch it out and talk to a couple of agents who gave me lovely feedback and showed me what was perhaps wrong with it. And I sort of learned from all of that and tried to then take that away and not force myself, but to just sit with things and see where it took me and wait for them, the idea that felt right. And luckily enough, I think there was a good maybe 7 months before you know, Arthur and Teddy were sort of fully formed in my head between that. So it was just a really nice experience to have and to sort of try and learn from. And again, learning from the people who I was fortunate enough to be able to speak to as well.
So did you go out with that first manuscript and query with agents with
it? I did, yeah. And I had a couple of people ask for, you know, full submissions, which was, you know, incredibly exciting and lovely. And at the time, you're completely absorbed in this experience and wanting the best for it, of course. But once I was able to talk to people and get the feedback and sit with it and go, yeah, I get you. This, I understand what you're saying about what's not right with this. And I could have gone away, you know, a couple of people said to go away, work on their notes and stuff like that. But it felt like I would need to start again for me personally, rather than trying to adapt with what I had. So it's still sitting there. It's still, you know, on the laptop. It's something that I think perhaps when I have more confidence and a better understanding that I would perhaps go back to, because I think it's very me. It's very much focused on a lot of experiences I've had. And I think it was good for me to get those out and to sort of unburden myself of a lot of perhaps that story that I wanted to tell, so that I could then go, well, do you know what? I'm going to write something that's a little happier and a little, you know, just more feel good than perhaps, oh my gosh, this is heavy.
Yeah. Especially for this book as well, because it's quite exposing. And I presume as well that if you had gone away and kind of polished that and resubmitted it and eventually got a book deal, you probably would have had to then do a lot of interviews where you were delving into a lot of personal stuff that maybe you might not be comfortable with talking about. And it's quite a lot to take on for a first book.
It is. And, you know, it's something that I'm not actually the, you know, what's the right word, perhaps shy about, you know, going through some of those experiences, because I think, you know, honesty and sort of being upfront about experiences you know, I've had as well along the way, especially, you know, now that I'm in this little world, I don't want to forget those. And I want people to, you know that you can also go through those and get to perhaps a point like this, and juggling, you know, mental health with these experiences, you know, as a debut author, you know, is quite overwhelming. So I think, you know, putting those out there and making sure, you know, another debut author might listen and sort of go, gosh, I've got that sort of similar experience. And, you know, I think I just love the chance to do that as well.
Yeah. I really admire the way you kind of wrote this novel, because it was like now or never. And I know you're quite a kind of fast writer. And I think you said you spent about 3 months working on this novel, sent it out, got great feedback, and then went, do you know what? I'm not going to do anything else with this book. I'm going to start again. I'm going to write something new. And you did it. And you did it in a really successful way. And I think some people might have been put off by the fact that you'd, you know, they might have stopped at a certain point and felt that they couldn't go off and write another book because they felt very strong feelings about this first book. But I really admire the fact that you just kind of went, no, I'm going to carry on and do something else.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, do you know what? That's the thing. I think I just really saw it as a learning experience, and wanting to take everything that I got from people who were so encouraging, because people were, generally the agents I spoke to were just, to have someone's time like that, where they, you know, actually do read your first three chapters, and then the people who asked for a full submission, and then they go in and read your writing, and you're absolutely nobody. But they come back to you with such, perhaps, you know, detailed feedback. And it's like, it's not perfect, and it's not something I'm going to, you know, work with you on right now. But if you go away and do this, because you've got the ability to do these things, and there's something there. I mean, I was taking that going, wow, okay, this is incredible. You know, I'm not even put off. I'm literally like, tell me more, because I'm going to take all of this on board and go and achieve this, because right now I need this.
That's a really positive outlook as well. I think there'll be some people that's something we always say as writers, is that the no's never stop. There's always going to be a point where someone is going to stop you and say something needs to be improved, or you get a rejection or whatever it is. And that, unfortunately, doesn't matter how successful you are, that always comes in your journey. But I think some people struggle necessarily sometimes with feedback, or they struggle if they think that was my best idea, or that was my one good idea. How do you work then? How is your kind of, what's your writing routine like? Are you very much someone who isn't afraid of that horrible blank document? You can just go out there and fill it. Or are you someone that kind of prefers the polishing later in the editing? What's your kind of writing routine like?
It's such a funny one because, again, I think it changed so much between, you know, my own personal two experiences with those two manuscripts. Because, yeah, I was completely terrified. You know, when you open up that document and you've got that blank page and you start typing those first few words and you see that word count building, it's daunting. And I mean, even post Arthur and Teddy, oh, doing it terrifies me again because it's just seeing that word count build again and you're like, wow, there's a long way to go here. But yeah, I did love the experience of writing Arthur and Teddy. That first draft was completely different experience to the first manuscript. So I wrote the first draft of Arthur and Teddy in 3 weeks, where I just wrote consistently day and night. I just had all the time in the world, and I sat at the kitchen table, and life was going on around me. I know I'm living at home. There's parents, siblings, dogs, and I just literally escaped into this world for 3 solid weeks, and it was the best experience. Like, genuinely, I just had the best time writing this, and it actually terrifies me that I almost set the bar too high with that experience, because trying to replicate that, I'm like, can I do this again? Possibly, was that a fluke? But the 2 weeks planning were so important because they just allowed me those 3 weeks to go bang and sit there and completely just lose myself.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, we'll talk about your next book at the end, but I wonder whether your kind of process will change inevitably because you have other factors that you're thinking about when you're writing. I mean, I certainly have when I'm writing new things where I'm thinking, where's this going to fit in the market and what's the pitch going to be? Whereas actually, probably when you write those first few books, you're not thinking about that at all. You're just thinking of the story and the characters and the things that you're interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's generally one of the strangest things that I've really had to sort of sit down and go, who am I? Who do people think I am as a writer? Because I had none of that. I was just writing these words and seeing where we ended up. And now suddenly I'm like, am I an author who writes rom-coms? Am I an author who does this? You know, do people want more gay characters from me? Do they want older characters? I'm trying to sort of figure myself out. With then perhaps wider people, you know, you're suddenly talking about agents, publishers, and then readers, because you know you want someone to think, oh, and you know, I enjoyed that, I might read his next book, and then if it's something completely different, you're like, what? So trying to get an understanding of myself has definitely been one of the strangest things, and I don't think I'm quite there even. I mean, I would love to over time, you know, branch into different things and explore other interests within writing. But yeah, sort of getting to grips with what, you know, what market people think you are
What your brand
alongside who
is.
you are. Yeah, it's a very strange thing to try and process.
What do you think it was then about Arthur and Teddy and this novel that was special? I know you had feedback about your first book, so maybe you were able to kind of identify what was working and what wasn't. What do you think it was about their story or this novel that was the thing that captured the kind of attention of not only your current agent, but also to get your book deal?
Yeah, I think when I was starting to write it again, I think the thing I took from book one feedback was that I needed to lose a lot of myself and to not feel like I was just writing about my own experiences per se. So making things authentic without not to sit down and write something feel good, but to make sure that it just didn't feel like I was unloading in a diary. To make sure that I was telling other people's stories in an authentic way, but to give someone something that they could take away from it, you know. So Arthur and Teddy, I hope people feel inspired or, you know, just comforted by it in some way. And that was all I really just wanted to do and sat down to do, that it was just something warm because that's what I needed at that point. I think that's where I was, you know, at that stage of everything that was going on in the world at that point. I wanted something nice. And I was like, okay, here we go. I'm just going to do this because I don't need to lean into the book one aspects too much. Write something positive that makes you feel good that you would have enjoyed reading if you were 21.
Yeah, and I actually think maybe lockdown has a lot to do with that. And certainly, authors I've spoken to this year, majority of them have written their debut in lockdown. And a lot of
Yeah.
people have said, like, this book is the book of my heart, or it's the book that I needed, or it's the book that got me through. And I see that, you know, it doesn't matter what the genre is or what the themes are. That seems to be a kind of common thing. And I think, like you say, you escaped into this world of hope and of this loving, lovely family who, you know, you wanted to spend time with in a really dark time for the world, basically.
Absolutely.
And I think, well, there was certainly, I mean, I won't give any spoilers, but if you're a kind of slushy, deep down romantic like I am, there were definitely moments where I was like, oh, my heart, and, you know, it's really lovely. And it's definitely a book you want to read when you're, you know, feeling a bit rubbish, or you just need that little lift. And I think it'll be interesting to see kind of going forward what you write next, and I'm certainly interested in that. But I'd love to hear a bit more about what the publishing process has been like for you, whether there's been anything. I mean, I know you're going into it kind of like most debuts, kind of completely blind, not knowing what's going to happen, but was there anything that was particularly surprising or particularly challenging that you had to deal with? And if there were difficult times, how do you think that you kind of coped with them?
So overall, yes, I was absolutely blind, and it's been the most incredible learning experience. So, you know, every new word, whether it was, you know, from a contract, learning what words and this meant, I was quite overwhelming. And thank God for agents who can, you can fire off an email or a WhatsApp to and suddenly have an explanation, and an absolute godsend to have someone like that to translate things. But the experience on the whole has been positive and really, really lovely. You know, I feel so fortunate that I landed with a team who really got the book and wanted to champion it. So my editor Cicely, we worked on it a couple of drafts together after that first one. And I'm someone who is very much open to feedback. I'm not precious about changing things, about seeing other perspectives that someone, you know, whose experience I value, because, you know, they're in a job that, you know, they do this every day. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm absolutely here to learn from you. And even though I feel like I know the characters, I absolutely want to take every bit of feedback and weigh it up, you know, objectively, and go, that suggestion is something that I either really appreciate, and then give my side of, you know, the argument, perhaps, if we don't want to change it. But on the whole, everything that I've done with Cicely or anyone else along the way has been a really lovely experience, you know. And again, I'm just all about the feedback and the learning and taking away and sort of going, yeah, they know what they're doing, and they're helping me make it the best it can be, which ultimately is what I want for myself and, you know, for someone who's going to read it.
Mm. What about people who are kind of hoping to be published maybe this year, next year? What advice would you have if they were approaching this kind of debut year? What would you just say? Would it be just to kind of enjoy every experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Ask questions. Don't be afraid of those questions, because you will have so many, and they're there to answer them, and they're perfectly happy to answer them. It's a learning experience. Get as much out of it as you can. Really enjoy it. You know, whether it is going to the printers down the line, whether it's doing a copy edit or a line edit, and you perhaps, you know, you might be familiar with what exactly these things entail. Just ask those questions, because they're there. And again, you are working collaboratively to make this the best it can be. And it's just not being afraid of feedback, of asking questions, of just learning and enjoying it at the same time. And again, if you do dislike something, don't be afraid to have an opinion, because this is, you know, this is your baby that you're gonna be talking about in 12, 18 months time, and you're gonna be talking about it a lot, and you wanna be proud of it, and you wanna be proud of what people read. So don't be afraid of all those things, you know, and get the most out of it.
Mm, and you've mentioned it now, so I have to ask you about it. Tell us about your experience going to the printers and seeing it come to life.
That was one of the most surreal days of my life, to be perfectly honest. It was something that I had dreamt about. So I, at the earliest opportunity, and I'm sure my editor was thinking, oh my gosh, he's talking about the printers already. I was just like, do you think I can go to the printers whenever this is happening? And they were so lovely and made it all happen. And the printers themselves got me there and just looked after me so well. It gave me the most incredible tour of the factory floor. And to be there and see the final stage where the book was going around on the press, having the hardback attached and then the cover wrapped. And to see it just come out in that moment was kind of mind-blowing. And to actually pick up the very first finished copy off the press was, yeah, I mean, completely surreal. Yeah. And just to be able to share that, you know, I had my editor there with me as well. So just being able to share that experience, you know, with her after, you know, 18 months, and yeah, just to be there, watch this happen was a dream come true completely.
Oh, that just sounds incredible. I hope I get to do it one day, and I'm sure there'll be many people going like, oh, that sounds so amazing. I wish I could.
I know. I don't want the printers to hate me for backing them up. But if you have the chance, absolutely do it. Ask for it, because it is just one of those, you know, bucket list experiences that I think will stay with you forever then.
Mm. So finally, Ryan, can you give us any hints at all about what you're writing next?
Well, I will tell you that there are some older characters who I hope people will absolutely take to their hearts as much as, thankfully, people have Arthur and a few of the other ones so far. But yes, there are a few older characters who I'm absolutely in love with, who are at a stage in life where they're going through things. And yeah, they're leaning on each other, but leaning on someone new who comes into their life as well.
Oh, that was a good little tease. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, Chloe. It's been so lovely.
That was Ryan Love talking about his commercial novel, Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.